Reading from Bhakti Sandarbha, Anuchade 298, eligibility for worship. There are numerous other limbs of bhakti one can perform on the path of worship, such as decorating one's body with the marks of a Vaishnava, accepting the garlands used by the Lord, and honoring the water that washed the Lord's feet. The individual importance of all these practices can be gleaned from thousands of different scriptures. Om Jnana Timarandasya Jnanam Jana Salakaya Tatsurimbasam Yena Krishnai Sri Gurave Namaha Ite Tanya Mano Vishnam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Padamayam Dati Tata Dantitam Adadana Sanandante Idam Yache Kuna Puna Kuna Rupa Padam Boja Yulisham Janma Janmani Vairagya Yud Bhakti Vitam Tayatnai Apayam Amanadip Sanandam Sipandriya Paradu Paduti Sanatanasam Padumastriyami Vancha Kalpa Taru Vyasya Vipa Sindhu Vaye Vicha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasudevo Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Rama. So greetings from Vrindavan. Brahma Mala is so happy to be on this side rather than the New Jersey side. She's sitting in front of me. Hari Jayadev, Hari Thai, Hari Kirtan, something that you don't know. But having a very nice time of the evening. At 4, we're doing Anchalila of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and somehow or other, we're up to the Siddhanta Madhava, very wonderful drama by Rupa Goswami, as Ramananda Roy is asking the details and asking the different verses, explaining different Siddhantic conclusions about the absolute truth, like what is Bhava and what is Prema. And so we're actually relishing that. And such a nice group of devotees just come every day. Of course, some come and some leave. It's very pleasant. And somehow this year, I remember a couple of years ago, Prema and Asuraj and Gopriya and some others came. And weather is exceptional. I think this year it's even better. Really, the weather's been beautiful. And then, of course, the last couple of days, we've been occupied with the disappearance of Sri Vibhu Chaitanya. I spoke about that extensively on Wednesday. A great soul, really exalted Vaishnava. And 2 days ago, they had the glorification to the temple. And I was very happy to sit there for 4 or 5 hours. And of course, Anderson, I also got to speak and hear other people. How much they were touched by his pure devotion and his dedication. Many people, just the fact that he only left the compound once is amazing in itself. That's 33 years. It means, you know, when you're so satisfied, you don't need to move. That's actually, you know, He didn't move for any, he didn't have any duty to move outside, so he didn't move. There was no, that means that the heart is filled, and the heart is filled with love. There's no need to search anywhere else. His heart is filled with pure devotion. As he told Jaya Dwaita Marge about 5 months, he said, back broke, mind happy. You know, and it's amazing. And just in this Kartik, he got presents. Somehow someone donated him cups and spoons. And he called all the God brothers, God sisters in. You know, he was giving everybody gifts and prasadam and really exalted. So I was just trying to meditate on the consciousness of someone. Didn't just leave. It wasn't that he just didn't leave. His mind never went to the material world. He didn't live in the world in relationship to this body at the 21st century or something. You know, the world in relationship to this body is that this body has a particular president of the United States, whether you like it or not. You know, and so many other things. You know, he just wasn't designated in this particular time. He was on the transcendental platform of worshiping Radha and Krishna. He was in the eternal realm of activity. And, of course, for preaching, you know, we do need to know things, etc. It's not my point. But he was so absorbed and always chanting and hearing about Krishna and always serving. And the amazing thing, and I tried to point this out when I spoke, is that he showed how devotional service has no material impediment. Because even when, you know, he was cooking for 15 years, all day long, one person, beauty, sweets, everything, all offering. Then serving the Charanamrita, and then finally confined to his room. But he always found expressions of service, and in his room, just as it's mentioned here, accepting the garlands used by the Lord as part of Archana, all the deity garlands, the Maha, used to come. And he would take them and make little garlands for his altar. You know, they're called full bhangra, like a big display of flowers, or, you know, his altar. He had all these beautiful pictures and you know, it was all decorated every day, and he was distributing prasadam every day, even though he couldn't even leave his room. So it was really an exalted, and two things I actually were fortunate. His Holiness Bhakti Truswami, I guess, came in or flew in, and he came towards the end of the ceremony, and he spoke, and he told a very nice story. He was cooking for Prabhupada, and Viva Chaitanya was cooking for the deities. And Viva Chaitanya said, you're so fortunate to be cooking for Prabhupada. And Bhakti Chu said, well, you're very fortunate to be cooking for Radhashan Sindhu. He said, if you want, I can arrange you can cook for Prabhupada. He said, well, you know, I'm just so, I no time because I'm cooking for the deities every day. Then he said that this is a fact. I remember this. Prabhupada hadn't eaten for 5 or 6 months. And then Prabhupada said, see what they're making in the kitchen. And then Prabhupada came back. He said, you know, he's cooking petrolies and samosas. He said, please get some to them. You know, so they offered the beans and kept on cooking some more. And they brought Prabhupada some hot samosas and hot petrolies over to Mal Krishnamurti's objection. He's very concerned with Prabhupada's health. And he was afraid that Prabhupada would get indigestion. It's a logical conclusion. But he said, oh, Prabhupada, you know, actually, I can't do anything, you know. And Prabhupada ate him, and he was fine. And, of course, he told Bhakti Chito Prabhupada's sister Pishala. He was a big advocate of Prabhupada eating. And he said, you know, he digested him. And Krishna said, if Prabhupada wanted, he could digest the whole world. But the point Bhakti Chumaj made is he felt that somehow or other, you know, there's a transcendental system that's on the subtle platform of the super soul, which connects things. And he felt that Prabhupada was in contact with that, and Vidya Chaitanya was in contact. So to Prabhupada, really wanted to fulfill his desire. And therefore, ate the deity prasad that he cooked. So that was nice. And then there was another story that was told by Gaurijan Prabhu. Prabhupada was walking around the temple. And when he passed the deity kitchen, because that's on the Prakram path, he heard the singing and he stopped to the devotees. He said, listen to that. That's pure devotion. And B.B. Govinda Swami was also very close to him. He also came in. He was very close. Because he was the deity kitchen, the temple. He was the temple cook at that time. The sweetest thing is just the Prabhupada was so extremely austere in every way imaginable, starting from the physical, mental, social, political, existential. I remember one time in Vrindavan, somehow he was healthy, the mind was peaceful, somehow there were no external crises that we had to deal with, you know. And then, because it's a picture of Vrindavan, I remember I just came down to the existential problem. I'm going to die. We have nothing else to worry about. You worry about the real things. Okay. So it's always really tough. And sometimes you get knock on your door, and people go in the song because they can imitate it kind of. Haribo! Haribo! And he was there. Someone's desperately trying to call me. He was there, and... The outside world, he was really bad, you know, with samosas and kachoris and his famous sweets, you know. And you would feel that this is the mercy of Radharani because of his connection. So it was very, very just wonderful to discuss, and people were just so peaceful just sitting there. Appearing, and afterwards, Bibi Govinda Swami invited myself, Gaurijan, Bhadi, and Hari Kirtan over to his house for some prasadam. We put some of the Maha Prasadam from Bibi Chaitanya. So it was a wonderful day. So we're going to finish up this section on Archana. And it's a very, very long section, and then there's only. Let me just see. Completing the rest of the items, there's only about 15 pages. And then we get to the section on Raghunuga Bhakti. This is to the end of the Bhakti Sandhavan. I'm going to discuss that. It doesn't discuss the esoteric techniques, but it discusses the very principles of Raghunuga Bhakti, which is the essence of Bhakti itself. This real Bhakti is Raghunuga Bhakti. Your bhakti is absorption, and you're only absorbing something when you have love. And vayu bhakti means you do something because it's a rule. And therefore, you develop this faith that the potency and the benefit to you is the completion of the activity, and not the activity itself. So real bhakti is Raghunuga bhakti. And it's a very wonderful, quite philosophical and things, but no one should shy away and go, I'm not advanced enough to hear this subject for me. I'm just trying to chant my rounds. Or, I'm not advanced to hear this subject for me. I'm not even chanting my rounds. Or, I'm not advanced enough to hear it, whatever it is, but it's a very important subject to understand in the proper way. And it doesn't it's a little bit surprising when I study it, because it's not like, you know, vast descriptions of Radha and Krishna, especially the principles of it. And it deals with very important subject matters, how, you know, bhakti is above morality, which is a very, it deals extensively with that too. I mean, anyway, we'll go with that. Okay, so, you know, we discussed this Archana section, and that is nicer section, the deity as the place where the Lord accepts service and personally manifests, and how you could worship either the Lord or the receptacle of the Lord, the cow, Krishna's manifest. There are so many places you can see the Lord, Krishna's manifest in his imminent features, the Paramatma. You can kind of see God in the world in ways, and he also manifests personally in things like the Shalom Shira, his deity form, which is not different. And that worship is discussed extensively, even how he accepts worship through the service to other people, according to their awareness of God. And the devotee has the highest awareness of God. So many things were discussed like that. And then in this particular section, I think it's the previous section. It describes the offering itself. And a very interesting section, we discussed this the last time, is that, you know, when worshiping, sometimes because the nature of it is, you know, Bhagavad Vidhi, Bhagavad Marg is about the bhav, the devotion. But also this Pancharitri Marg, the using of the world and transforming it, such as deity worship. And therefore, in the path of devotion, a lot of times the practices of deity worship have been appropriated from the culture. And they're not, some of the mantras and some of the things that you use in that are not always directly mentioning Krishna or et cetera. And it just mentions that, although the mantras have different meanings, one should meditate on the meaning that's specifically related to one's goal. That is very practical. You meditate on the meaning that's related to your goal, which is self-surrender and worship of Krishna or Radha Krishna. So he gave different examples of that. And then discussed the point about direct and indirect worship. Direct worship meaning pure devotional service. And indirect meaning mixed worship. You know, you worship God with some motive. And he described that you worship God with some motive, you'll get the fulfillment of your desire. And if you worship God in pure bhakti yoga, you will attain Krishna directly. So he's, you know, discussing these type of things. And without motive means without renunciation and without possessiveness either. They're both motives of enjoyment, because we renounce things when possessiveness is painful. So now we're up to the section today in eligibility for worship. There are numerous other limbs of bhakti that one could perform, so many things, so many items. Generally, you know, a lot of devotional service is related around the deity. And in fact, in a discussion I had with one scholar, he proposed the theory that the more internal meditations, because whether you do external or internal, it's internal that's important, actually. And if you do external things, because it invokes the internal mood. It's not the external or internal that's important, it's the mood. It's the devotion, it's the sentiment. And worshiping the deity is a very good way to develop a bhava or sentiment. And again, it was mentioned, deity worship is even for neophytes. It doesn't mean it's just for neophytes. The great souls and worship deities. But even for neophytes means, yes, you can deal with things and objects of this world, which kind of steadies the mind, utilizes the senses, and enables the internal devotion to kind of manifest. But a lot of that is in relationship with the deity. It's very, very effective. But it should be done with the devotion of sentiments. Now he discusses the eligibility of a person to perform worship, and it quotes from the Bhagavatam, "O Lord, who are respectful to all, this worship of you is indeed commendable for persons belonging to all stages of life. And for women, and for sages also, I consider it to be the best of all paths that leads to ultimate welfare." Now, a very interesting point is here, and I went when I attended these classes by my good friend. In fact, I just got a message from him that at the end of March he'll be in New Jersey. So, if anybody wants to go with me to visit, I'll let those people know. He's a good friend of mine. So it's a very interesting point here, because this compound, Sarva Varnanam, refers to all castes. So it's the right of all human beings. And so it describes here, in Jiva Goswami's conjunction, and this was the comment made by Satyanarayan, he says that, here it says, women and sutras should worship Lord Vishnu with reverence by the process described in the Agama, after thinking the master in the heart. Sutras should worship the Lord by mantras composed in the name of the Lord, while everyone can worship Lord Vishnu by the path of Agama, which is approved by the Vedas. Even women who are devoted to their husbands have the right to worship Lord Vishnu. This is an eternal injunction, so it seems that that's a Vedic injunction. And they're allowed to worship the deity. And what his comment was is that it seems that sometimes some of the injunctions get lost over time. And here it gives us an eternal injunction. But sometimes with the smarter Brahmins, they restrict that completely. So he's questioning whether they lost some of the eternal injunctions. The smarter Brahmins are like, they don't allow that. And so Lord Krishna, so this is going to say what is a devotee and who can worship the deity. It's universal. And this is in the Vishnu Dharma Purana. It is said, Lord Krishna is pleased with a person who manifests eight types of devotion towards his or her worshipful deity. The mantra and the guru who gives mantra. These are the eight types of devotion. To be affectionate towards the Lord's devotee. To approve of the Lord's worship. Approve means you appreciate the Lord's worship. You just appreciate it. To worship the Lord regularly yourself with a pure mind. To give up hypocrisy for the sake of the Lord. And if to develop attachment to hearing the Lord's pastimes, to engage the limbs of the body in the service of the Lord, to always remember the Lord, to make the Lord's name a very life, especially that last one. You have to do that. You have to make the name a very life. And it's because the name is Krishna, and Krishna is our life. If you chant with some attention and give up offenses, and the name will become very, very dear to you. And you can chant the name all the time. Trinadati, Sunichena, Aurati, Sivishtana, Manina, Mandanina, Kirtanya, Sita, Hari. It's not that people who are chanting a lot of rounds are just you know, have greater mind control, and they're, you know, undergoing this great austerity. You know, you've got, we tend to look at the world the way we are. No, but actually people develop an attraction to chanting the holy name. Not an austerity in that sense. They develop an attraction to chant the holy name. That's the thing that they like to do most. It's like people can do so many things, right, all day long. Of course, you can sit in front of the television all day long. You know, I mean, there's so many things people can do all day long. But the majority, you may get the attraction to the name. And Rupa Goswami has that verse, Tunde Pandavani within. Within a day, Pandavani, Madhita, Kana, Krodha, Kandambani. Can't imagine how much nectar is in these two names, Krishna. When they enter on my tongue, I pray for millions of tongues. When they enter into my ear, I pray for millions of ears. When it enters into the courtyard of my heart, the senses become inert. I can't imagine how much nectar is in these syllables, Krishna. Haridas Thakur heard that, he started to dance. What you tell you said, tell that to Ramananda Roy. And Ramananda Roy heard that, he said, Rupa Goswami, your writing is a mine of Siddhantic conclusions. And so they have so much nectar and bhav and devotion and love. But these eight types of bhakti are found even in a lecture. That person becomes a sage and an abode of truth and dignity. Furthermore, it is said in the Tattva Samara, just as bell metal is turned into gold by an alchemical process, human beings become twice born by the process of fiction. So this is the eligibility. The eligibility is your devotion. It's not your caste. It's not your birth. It's not your gender. The bhakti process, it's your devotion. And according to your devotion, you become eligible. In the section of verses from Srimad Bhagavatam, beginning with Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.21, it is stated that in different yugas there are different manifestations of the Lord and correspondingly different classes of worship. And he goes on to explain that this is not absolute, because in all ages people worship different deities, and there's verses for that too. Anuchet 299, other practices within Archana. In this way, Archana has been described, this process of worship. A very elaborate section. Somehow, I think we have 15 pages and we get to Bhagavata. Various limbs of, and then I think after that, either I go to the beginning of Bhakti Sandarbha or maybe do the CC, because finish the Antalila. It's very wonderful and all philosophical conclusions. And I was surprised because I got a little worried, because in a section where there's 15, 20 verses from the bottom of it, they're really high, and I'm just, how is I just going to read them and give the relevance to the audience? But the way we had Aikirtan is reading the verses, that is Aikirtan. Voice over voice. So that was nice, and I was commenting on the verses, but somehow in the audience here, it became very, very relevant. We were in the mood that we're sitting in Vrindavan, and we're hearing, you know, with the Goswami, this like drama, and trying. And I described from Bhajan Mahasya how it's possible to appreciate that, even if you're not of the standard, is you put it very high over your head, and you pray to become qualified. That's the way to do it. You pray to become qualified. You appreciate it. You don't think you're qualified, but you honor it. or the height of its realization. But it was really, I mean, they were really sweet verses. And I didn't read them unless I saw that the devotees were absorbed and attentive and appreciative. Some devotees left yesterday. Like I say, people come and go, and I got nice notes how much they appreciated this. So, in this way, Arjuna has been described, the various things of worship he can learn from books, such as the Agamas. Agamas mean like really following the Vedas. It's not, the basis of the Vedas. And they give more details about deity worship. The Bhagavatam also doesn't give details, which is principle. Other devotional practices, such as the celebration of Krishna's birth, observance of vows during the month of Kartik, fasting on the Kadasi, and bathing during the month of Magh, are to be included as parts of Archana. I know Mahanidhi Swami follows all these, including bathing in the month of Magh. The month of Magh is January. Really cold. That's why there's verses that devotional service is universal to everyone, just like bathing in the month of Magh. Because no one makes a restriction. You can't bathe in the month of Magh. It's not like a crowded beach. It's freezing cold. And I remember going to the Triveni in Allahabad. And there was this one really little section of ashrams that, like a road that goes to the king. And I stayed with this person that I know, with the Gurukul, with the Guru tour. And I remember, bathing in the month of Magh. You go down to that holy river, it's really actually an ecstatic thing. Bathe in the river in the month of Magh, freezing cold. That's the original Adi polar bear club. Bathe in the month of Magh. Magh. Among these, Krishna's birth celebration is described in a dialogue between Brahmana and Narada in the Vishnu Rahasya. So Jiva Goswami, again, is pulling from so many books that he brings to Vrindavan. Quote, even the devotee should celebrate the birth of Lord Krishna, the son of Devaki, for his satisfaction by observing the appropriate vows with devotion and without miserliness in regard to expenditure. If the devotee does not observe this festival, he goes to hell for a period of 14 Indras. Don't forget your Janmashtami celebrations. And if a person gives up the celebration of Krishna's birth and observes other vows instead, he derives none of the benefits that he may have heard from the scriptures or witnessed in others. So, I mean, get the main point. The main point is that it's Vaishnavas, Madhavatiti Bhakti Janani, that these days of the Padasa and Janmashtami, made Bhakti Nathakasa gives birth to devotion. A special mercy available, and it's an inherent part of devotional service. I notice that, I live in India my whole devotional life. My first 20 years of my devotional life was in India. India, there's nothing else going on. I kid them, you don't see anybody working there, do you? Right? Now, everyone that's here, no one's working, right? I mean, like devotees or, it doesn't have that thing, And if they do, it's like kind of nearby or something. The point I'm making is that you live here, all the festivals, and it's centered around the temple, all the festivals and holidays take on a real significance. Because the whole town is celebrating them, basically. Jiva Goswami's disappearance, there's like a, Kirtan festival, today there'll be Bhakti Siddhanta, there'll be a Pushpanchami, everything's a couple of minutes away. And it's not, oh my God, I have to get off from work today. So I notice when you go to the West, there's such a tendency just to not make those days special, which is a shame because It's a real boost for spiritual life. Gurichan also, told me for Grihasthas, married people, he said especially festivals are very, very important. He also said he's convinced that, Prabhupada's mission is a congregational movement right now, obviously, and that retreats are very important. He studied the Catholic Church. A lot of the advancement is made in retreats. So I'm thinking also maybe have some retreats, people could come and do something deeper. Liberality in regard to expenditure of wealth is described in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. A person utilizes wealth in 5 areas: for dharma, for renown, for investments to increase wealth, for enjoyment, and for family enjoys this life and the next. I know Prabhupada's purport quoted Rupa Goswami to make sure that a percentage of his wealth is used for emotional service. It's so easy. I've noticed the phenomena, and I'm thinking about this. I noticed the phenomena that the American nature is that no matter how much you make, you live beyond your standard of living. No matter how much, and I've seen that, somehow, somebody, when they get out of the movement, they know what they're going to do, and they live. And then they make twice as much, and they live, but they're the same financial pressure. And then they make twice as much as that, and the same financial pressure. My mother had a principle in business: 10% off the top goes into savings. Someone told me that. 10%. Whatever she made, 10% went away into some kind of retirement or something like that. But she's spending now. it's something with that mentality. I observed it. Where generally Indians are more trained, even if they make a little, they save, and it creates a kind of financial independence. It's better for spiritual life, actually. And we also see that, people who give, somehow Krishna also reciprocates with them too. I see that also. So there's something, but anyway, the utilization of wealth, because he's saying in terms of the deity of Krishna, you should not be miserly. It's part of devotion to give the best. So now we'll discuss the observance of vows during the month of Kartik, as in the Skanda Purana. After glorification of all the holy places, the text says, my boy Narada, the month of Kartik is always especially dear to Lord Keshava. Whatever pious acts one performs during this month for the sake of Vishnu bears imperishable results. O Narada, this is verily true. The one who passes the month of Kartik, which is so dear to Lord Damodar, without observing any vow for his pleasure, takes birth as an animal, being deprived of all dharma. Look, I'm depressing the audience. I can say myself that, my observance of Kartik every year is probably the most important thing in my spiritual life. I get something from that month. I get something from that month because I'm a sannyasi, and surely the duty of a sannyasi, a Vaishnava sannyasi, they travel for 11 months of the year, but during Kartik you should come to the Dham and perform reinitiating regular activities. And even I remember when I Prabhupada, I remember him coming here during Kartik. No one was here at that time. I remember Prabhupada sitting in the courtyard during Kartik. And he at Little Kirtan and have some devotees speak. And then, Prabhupada would come to the day, Kartik, try to come. At least when I was here, I was here in the last years, which was in 74, so 74, 75, 76, like that. He was here for Kartik. Kartik is very special, and so is the Kartik. So, Ekadasi, next we will discuss the observance of Ekadasi. Now, if you think following Janmashtami and Kartik is bad, next we will discuss the observance of Ekadasi or fasting on the 11th day of the moon. This is a compulsory vow to be observed even by non-Vaishnavas. There are many I got a few wise guys in the audience today. It's a real crowd here. There are many general statements about Ekadasi, such as in the Vishnu Dharma, quote, that the one is a devotee of Lord Vishnu or the sun god, he must observe the vow of Ekadasi. And in the Sarva Purana, whether one is devoted to Vishnu, Shiva, the sun god, one must follow the vow of Ekadasi. I have this whole thing I read on Ekadasi, which was really interesting about, written by some Vaishnav saint about health in Ekadasi. How something with the moon and the water in the body and then how fasting and these things was really good at that time. And I've noticed that people who fast on Ekadasi, they generally maintain very, very good health. Or you can say they fast on Ekadasi because they have good health. But my observance is and I tend to fast more in the West than here. Just to counteract the traveling and things. Okay, I'm going to stop here for questions, even though it's only 45 minutes, because I may also want to go to the temple and see if I can catch. Oh, I forgot the most important thing. Today here is it the disappearance or appearance day? What?
Yeah.
Here about 50 mahotas or shilabhati sabhanta saraswati pasa. Shri Varshadhanadi Devi. Ayataya Kapadeya Krishna Sambandha Vijnana Ayane Pabale Namaha Madhur Jodhvala Premada Irupanuga Bhakti Da Idora Kaluna Shakti Vigraha Namostite Namaste Gauravani Srimurtaye Dinatarane Yupanu Gavaru Hapa Siddhanta Dvanta Harare Yupanu Gavaru Hapa Siddhanta. He did not tolerate anything that was against the confusion. I should have ended earlier because I don't have that much time now, but I'm just thinking, it was just the one thing. And he was a young boy about 5 years old and he ate the mango that was supposed to be offered to the deity. And his father said, chastise him. And he said, I'm an offender. And he never ate for the rest of his life. And to kind of help people that are in the West to understand it, it's like if you ate ice cream or pizza that was offered to the deities. And you got, before it was offered to the deities, and you got chastised. Like an Italian saying, the mango for Bengali, it's like an Italian saying. A five-year-old child boy saying, I'll never eat pizza again for the rest of my life. It can just show you the sensitivity to Dharma and spirituality. The desire to do what's right and carry that over. And then, just remembering his vow of Haridas Thakur for 10 years, 1 billion names. 196 rounds a day. The vow of Haridas Thakur. There was one saint here in Puchari at the site of Govardhan. He took the vow of Haridas Thakur 20 times in his life. Valhalla Backpack Course, 6 weeks, 8 months, 192 rounds a day, 100 dietaries before eating. And you sit in one place. You know, you practically sit in one place. It's like a real yogi. This person did it for 20 times in his life. I remember this is the classic story where I took the cynical New Yorker there. Charlie, some of you know Charlie. He's real cynical. So we went in there. Because I didn't know that saint was there, but a friend of mine was in Pickle and said, let's go see him. So we went, and he was in this back little courtyard sitting. And he was a very, very old man. They said he was 120 years old at the time. And, you know, he was just in his copings, and he was deaf, and he was blind, you know, and he was really thin. And we went up there, and, you know, we had a screen practically in his ear to hear us. And, you know, he just said, Bhajan Karo, chant. And he was a very, very sweet man. So when we went out, I said, Acharya, you know, what did you think? And he said, not a day over 110. So, that's a cynical New Yorker. But, yeah, Bhakti Siddhanta took that vow. Also, the same amount of time that he did it in 10 years. He took a vow. And then, you know, the spirit of preaching, and he was the Acharya. I'm just finishing a paper, and we're going to probably, it's going to be up in a week. I'm going to launch it on the Bhakti Collective website, the students' new website. And I'm going to send out the link to that so people can read it on that. We're working on it. And it was so edifying to understand the depth of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta's understanding of Rupa Nuga, following the footsteps of Rupa Goswami and the teachings of Sri Jiva. And I think the people, the paper comes out, they'll see how, you know, how connected he was to our tradition. And you know, whatever realization he had that perhaps distanced people a little bit from prematurely indulging in higher topics of Krishna consciousness was so backed by Shastra. So bad. In other words, the principle is there, but in time you have different audiences. The same principle. It's the same approach. It's the same qualification for the subject matter. The only difference was the audience became less qualified. And therefore, people who didn't exert caution in the 20th century in relationship to these topics didn't really understand the Shastra deeply. That's the conclusion. Because he understood very well what was the qualification according to the six Goswamis. So, you know, it's so glorious on this particular day to meditate on him for mercy. And as my dear godmother Parthasarathy Kabir said, we advance by mercy. Mercy comes from the great souls. And the conduit to that mercy is our worship and glorification of them. So on this particular day, well, there, you're kind of here now, so you'll get to celebrate that 2 days. But tomorrow you should at least chant his prayers. You should have a picture of him. You should offer some incense. You should pray to him. Otherwise, it was a great opportunity to advance in Krishna consciousness and hear something. There's nice books that were written about him. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, a huge book that describes his glories and his preaching and the whole exchange with Srila Prabhupada is so dynamic. The Prabhupada came to him and said, "Who will listen to you? You know, who will listen to this message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? They're still subjugated by the Indians." And he said, "What? By the British, by the British." He said, "Krishna consciousness is such a necessity that it can't wait. you're a young man, why don't you preach this in the English language? I mean, that's us sitting here right now. That seed of us sitting right here is Bhakti Siddhanta's desire that the message becomes proliferated, widening in the West, and by the distribution of transcendental books, and therefore Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur called the printing press the Brihat Vedanga. And the Vedanga could be heard for a few blocks. The kirtan produced by transcendental literature published could be heard all around the world. And it's really amazing, too, when you're here in the Dham, even my class, to see the variety of devotees from all over the world. Yeah. And unity on this high principle in shelter of Srila Bhakti Prabhupada, coming from Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, and seeing that by following his teachings, dedicating themselves to kirtan and preaching of kirtan, how people actually become very elevated and fixed. I'm sure Hari Kirtan, that was perhaps one of the realizations you got from just being in the Dham and associating with people. How many serious devotees from different cultures and different experiences are that really have imbibed, you know, a depth of pure devotion, of devotion of service and purity. You know, and it's so refreshing because you can see that this is actually what Braja Bhakti really is. The essence, the core of Braja Bhakti is that need of selfless service with the to Radhashyam Sundar, with the objective of actually attaining that. That's actually the core. And therefore, the verse of the CC, that intense eagerness for Krishna, is more important than thoughts of Krishna. If the thoughts can be a self-imposition of the mind, the intense eagerness is the real thing. It's the bhav. Manjari Bhav, it's really the Bhav. That's not what the Bhav. The form you can mistake. But the Bhav is selfless service, and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta gave a wonderful process for us to proceed to the highest level. So I'll end there. Are there any questions? Okay. Would anybody like to say Hare Krishna? That'd be a joke. Not all at once. Maybe half the audience is here. Hi, Dad. Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Who's that?
This is Govardhan.
Who?
Govardhan.
Govardhan, thank you for coming and listening from Edison. Thank you very much. And study. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. It's Deva Deva Dasi.
Deva Deva. Hare Krishna. Hi. Hey, Hare Kirtan became very excited to hear your transcendental name. Okay. She's laughing. You should see Hari Kirtan with his beard. We really Indianized him. He even got a chewed off glasses on the end. I mean, it's a big transformation to him.
When is he coming back to America?
He's decided to stay here permanently.
Oh, okay. I'll tell Elizabeth.
What? Oh, she's already put on a white sari and shaved her head.
Oh, okay, great.
You want to it too, right, David? David? What? You picked up, right? Because I didn't really want you to get a phone from Elizabeth. Okay. Okay. Thank you, David.
Very well.
I will. Thank you, good. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna?
Krishna Maharaj, this is Bharati.
Okay, thank you. I'm so happy you and your husband are here so regularly, every time. Thank you so much. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna?
Hi.
So we're not living with that, Hare Krishna?
This is Kishori Radha. Kishori?
Hi, well, I know you. You're the mother with the triplets, right?
Yeah.
Kagunda's here.
I know, I'm so happy for her.
She's so happy. She's not envious at all.
Maybe a little bit.
She said maybe a little bit envious. Anyway, Kadunda's here, and she's been here for 3 days. She's finished her shopping, and she's ready for devotional service now.
I was not involved with that at all.
Okay.
Right, well.
I think she's come to a very high level now. Okay. Anybody else who wasn't born or moved to New Jersey would like to say Hare Krishna? I mean, I state I am New Jersey. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna? Okay, thank you all. Bunch of calls, but to do this job, because this is the name of the show.